I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Conrad Black, a distinguished biographer writing for the National Post about green, about climate change, about the revelations of policies around the world that may or may not be coming Conrad's way to Canada. And I find a surprise in his explication of how other countries are thinking of green. Conrad, a very good evening to you. I want to make certain I read correctly. The German government is weighing the banning of driving on weekends. Is that accurate? Good evening to you, Conrad.
Good evening to you, John. I'm afraid it is accurate. Now, you may imagine that while the Germans are by American and even Canadian standards, a people accustomed to regimentation and not much inclined to protest at minor infringements of their personal liberties, even at that, in Germany, there is an outcry that no democratically elected government can ignore. So, whether it'll ever actually be imposed or not, I have my doubts about that, but it is under discussion, under vigorous discussion. And, you see these demonstrations by mainly young people in different European countries complaining that the political leadership is not acting quickly enough to save the world for them, as they, they're looking forward to living for another 70 or 80 years in this world, and they want the political office holders today to make the environment more healthy for them. But, this is, of course, complete nonsense. The pollution put into the air every day of World War II, according to our alarmists today, would have been sufficient to raise the water level at Venice above the roof of, the column at St. Mark's Square, but never mind all of that. On the other hand, just telling a very a very automobile oriented people, a very talented nationality in manufacturing automobiles, and the founder of the long distance limited access highway, a country which has highways even today where there are no speed limits, you just go whatever speed you want, telling them they can't drive in the weekend. Even the Germans are not going to put up with it.
The Germans build magnificent vehicles. And
yes,
they were aware for some time that the Chinese meant to destroy that industry with a flood of EVs after the fossil fuel-driven beauties called German automobiles were banned. And the Germans were going along with this for a long time, but have the scales fallen from their eyes? Did they have a revelation?
Yes. I think that is exactly what's happened. And meanwhile, the Chinese have shipped, as I understand it, 500,000 of these electric vehicles to Europe, but they're stalled in the ports. They're just sitting there in unopened, the big container, those big container boxes, they're just sitting there, up to 500,000 cars in the, in the main ports of Europe and Antwerp and Rotterdam and Hamburg and so on. And there's no one to take them. And the whole policy is breaking down. But right as it is now, the German government is underwater in the polls.
Right.
And if they went ahead and tried to impose and enforce a ban on driving in the weekend, obviously there would be exceptions for emergencies of some kind. But if they attempted to do it, I don't want to get out of my depth here, but I think the resistance would be so great they would have a problem getting their own members of the Bundestag, the federal parliament, to vote for it.
Let's come home to Ottawa. Ottawa reads the same news that you and I read. Is it listening to the fact that the Germans went so far? They were at the cliff. They were about to take a dive into disunion, and they stopped themselves. Is that teaching Canada not to go any farther, to accept the fact that God wanted you to have resources such as the oil sands?
I wouldn't trace the cause and effect quite as precisely as you just did. But in fact, yes, I think opinion in Canada has moved. The opinion of this government doesn't seem to have moved much. But on the other hand, this government's position politically with the country now is a very delicate one. And it is a minority. And if at any moment their minority partner thinks that they would do better deserting the present government and forcing an election, they'll do it. So I let me put it this way. The present government of Canada is not one that would, in my opinion, risk its continued incumbency for anything, even if a future of the country depended on it. And no one, no ecologist, no matter how fanatical and rabid that person might be on the subject, is going to try and sell the idea that if we vary this program and make it less onerous to people, and as illustrated by the gasoline price, home, you know, heating fuel price, and that sort of thing, no one is going seriously to make the case successfully that any such sacrifice should be endured, no matter what the political consequences are.
Let's stay in Parliament for a moment. We're not arguing energy resources. We're looking at the conduct of the Prime Minister and his chief rival in the opposition, Mr. Poilievre. I was flabbergasted when I read that Mr. Poilievre had been escorted out or obliged to leave the Parliament floor, and this had to do with remarks toward the Prime Minister, who was speaking at the time. Did I read all that correctly?
Yes, this is what's called unparliamentary language. And he did use the word wacko in reference to the Prime Minister in describing one of his policy positions. And the objection was made that that was unparliamentary language. And the way that it works, very gentlemanly British rules of Parliament that with minor modifications we have in Canada, is the speaker then, if it appears that the majority of the House agrees that it was an unparliamentary remark, calls upon the person who's uttered it to retract the remark. He doesn't ask him to do more than that. He doesn't ask him to do anything terribly humiliating, you know. But in this case, I think Poilievre saw the potential for having a discussion on this point in the country and said that very politely to the speaker that he really, in good conscience, could not retract the remark. So the speaker equally politely said that in that case, under the rules of Parliament and with the apparent wishes of the majority, it was his obligation to require him to leave the House for the balance of the day, which he did. So, I mean, it wasn't one of these horrible incidents where the speaker has to call security personnel to remove a member of Parliament. You get that kind of thing about once every 20 years in Canada, but not on the leader of the opposition. And so it was sort of, in my opinion, Trudeau shouldn't have been so sensitive about it. I mean, you know, it's a debate and people say things that are a little exaggerated, and making the incident of it, he did. I think he looks a bit, small-minded.
Well, it's important to underline the fact that Poilievre does very well in polls these days, and that can't have not been an issue for both the Prime Minister and the Speaker, who's a member of his party, right? They were looking to scorn Poilievre for his political position.
Yeah. I guess they thought they could win the issue and make Poilievre look like an uncivilized person or someone prone to making extreme accusations. But instead, I think they just look thin-skinned and, you know, oversensitive.
And finally, we have 30 seconds or so. I saw a photograph of an encampment in McGill University, your distinguished university. But you tell me there's been no violence and no confrontation across the campuses about the...
So far, there has not. There was a little bit of scuffling out in British Columbia, but just one evening, nothing serious. And I think this one is not catching fire in this country.
You've long educated me the fact that everything about Canada is polite all the time. So,
relatively speaking, yes.
Conrad Black writing at the National Post about the German car companies deciding not to commit suicide. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.